the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to three separate chat rooms and all that. So there's plenty of room. No pushing, no shoving. Plenty of room to the back. Anyway, I posted a video over there called Bic Lighter Flashlight. It was my most recent video because it's a nifty little deal that I was... Doggone, I hate it when that happens. Let me take a drink of coffee so I can stop doing that. Nothing like a fresh cup of coffee early in the morning. Anyway, I posted a video over there in the super chat called Bic Lighter Flashlight. Because I was trying to figure out why it is, or what specific frequency range that solar panels begin to work on. And so I started testing all different light sources to see different measurements voltage-wise and see what was going on. Well, I bought these little cheapo solar panels on eBay. About 99 cents a piece. I actually bought like five of them. Made a nifty little gizmo that I'll share sometime here pretty soon with. But nonetheless, the one panel that was left over I used for testing purposes as well. Sitting on my deal right now, it's actually picking up light off of the fluorescent lighting on the top, picking up energy off of it, and I got a little LED hooked to it that's kind of dimly lit right now because the lighting in this room ain't really that great, but nonetheless it shows how sensitive these little solar panels are. And so basically I tried all different types of light sources. The closer you get to the light, the better or brighter it gets and all that kind of jazz. Well, just for giggles, I had my Bic lighter out and I lit that thing up right next to that solar panel, and by gosh, that entire thing got really bright. And so that started posing questions to me there. What else could I light this thing with? So I knew that one of the particular light spectrums out there was infrared. So I went over and I grabbed up an old remote control, this isn't in the video, this portion right here, but I'm going to have to do an update video in there. Excuse me, I don't know why I'm doing that this morning. Throat's dry. Anyway, so after I did the video on the Bic lighter, I started running some more tests to see if I could figure out exactly what light spectrums these things started to light at. Well, anyway, I went on and grabbed the remote control, an old DirecTV remote control, because that has an infrared signal on there. Infrared is in the non-visible light spectrum. And so I bring this remote control over there and I aim it at the solar panel, and sure as heck that thing started lighting up. I was holding down on a button so it's setting out pulses, so it was flashing. And so basically, using infrared, I knew I could get some power through that doggone deal there. Well, then I also had these little UV flashlights. And so I took, what a UV light will do on it. And once again, I put the UV light over the top of the deal, and it lit up. So I even tried it in the dark to make sure that I wasn't getting any other stray light from off the ceiling and stuff like that. So when I turned the light off and I shined the remote at it, yep, it lit up. And then I shined the UV at it and it lit up once again. And then I shined the UV and the infrared at it and it shined up real good. So the two of them combined in there. So I know that now I can use UV and infrared signal to actually get power off of those solar panels. Now you can obviously see the UV light, the blue LED UV light, so there is some visible light spectrum there, but in the infrared on the other hand, there's no visible light spectrum involved. It's just the frequency of that particular remote control and the little LED diode inside there, the infrared diode. They have actual infrared diode detectors that you can actually get. They're little diodes that actually pick up the light. So that's how your remote control turns the circuit on and off from across the room. You don't see the beam going across there. You just hit it and it picks up the light on the other side, changes the voltage, and tells the circuit to turn your TV on or off. Pretty neat deal, though. But I got to thinking about that. I mean, if you could use infrared and you can get LED lights and LED infrared diodes and UV LED diodes, make you up a circuit board, why couldn't you put you a panel together that would actually, when the sun goes down, it'd kick this thing on and run off of a low voltage and be able to still put juice to those solar panels? just a thought, but it's worthy to note. So, literally, what we're talking there is energy transfer from one LED to the next, and you know, it's worth looking into further. So, I got Raymond on here. Did you hear any of that, Raymond?
Yeah, I heard it all. Very interesting. Very.
Yeah, it's, when you can take a doggone remote control and put power to your doggone solar panel, that's pretty impressive.
It really is. You know, the next stage of your experiment would be to the battery that you're actually running the LEDs off of, your UV. Batteries that you're running them off of to hook the solar panels to charge the battery and see what's going to happen then.
Yeah.
That would be the next, the very next experiment.
Well.
But some people say you can't make more energy than you use, but duh, they're going by old sayings. You know, it sounds interesting. It sounds very interesting.
Well, even if you're not making more energy than you're using, even if you're just recirculating energy, I also posted a video in there in the chat room about inductors, and during this deal, it's a physics channel on YouTube that I think is worthy of checking out, because the way that it explains physics is with a visualization where you can actually see things moving and stuff. It explains it in a mechanical sense, and so I think it's pretty neat what they got going on there. But let me see if I can read the name of that YouTube channel so everybody can. I posted a video in there. You can click on that video and go straight to it. But it's Physics Videos by Eugene Kutteransky or something like that. I can't pronounce that name. But anyway, it's about physics, and he does a pretty good job on these videos from what I've seen so far. But one of the things that was in that particular video that caught my ear was that how inductors work, that if an inductor current, inductors want to resist any change in current. So if you got a current flow through an inductor to itself, if the current's flowing through the inductor to itself, they said in theory inductor would keep that current flowing forever until the resistance, because of the type of wire, until the resistance finally started wearing it down. But they also said if you had a superconductor that cut all the resistance down, that, you know, in theory you could keep that current flowing through that inductor forever, you know. So,
right.
At least that's the way I understand what they said, but nonetheless, imagine if you had that, if you had a superconductor with a superconducting wire with an inductor, and you was able to use that current flow through there to basically run some doggone LED lighting. That LED lighting would stay on forever. You just tap on the deal, get the current flow going through there, and if the LED was a superconductor as well, you know, you'd have light that would stay on without ever going off, because that inductor is going to resist any change in current. So whatever it's got going on at the time is what it'll keep. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Now, that sounds like, you know, spit in the eye of the laws of physics, but what do we really know about the laws of physics? I mean, we got some general idea how things work, but doesn't mean that we can't design specific materials to be so lacking in resistance. You see where I'm going there?
I see exactly where you're. I mean, you know, the laws of physics are the laws of physics. However, time and technology changes. You know? So, why couldn't it be? And the only way you can actually see it does or does not is to experiment and try with it. I mean, people who get fooled by the laws, you're trying to defy the law of physics. No, I'm not. I'm trying to see what this new technology can do.
Well,
it's called play. Find it out. I mean, dang on, man. I mean, what have you got to lose? What have you got to learn? You got a lot to learn. A lot.
You don't have to.
And even if you try it and it doesn't work, like you said, what about superconductors? What about the super this, super that? I mean, there's so much technology out there. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't really know.
And two points I'd like to make while we're on the subject is that, number one, if you turn that inductor on and they say it will even if it only goes for a long time after you shut initial power off,
right,
even if it only goes for, like, let's say an hour, hypothetically, it goes for an hour after you shut it off until resistance finally wears it down. There's an hour that thing was doing something for nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so,
you know, the real part about this show and what you're talking about right now is an explanation of people that are ostriches.
Yeah.
We don't stick our head in the sand and say, oh, we're not going to try to defy the laws of physics, because we're not. We are not going to defy the laws of physics. We're going to question them.
Yeah, and to see...
technology changes. I mean, why not?
And to see how far you can take the laws of physics, the limitations, you know, there's got to be, with every single action, there's an equal and opposite reaction is what they tell us. So we know there's a mechanical deal that we can use. If we push this way, then that much force is going to come back that way, that kind of deal.
Exactly.
Right? So that's something we know we can do. We can use that one specific laws of physics and mechanics to be able to do something, you know? And then,
right. Like
what you was doing with your two-stage oscillator, being able to use the knowledge of leverage, which is more physics, to be able to, you know, right now, you couldn't just go over there and pick up a 60-pound weight with your bare hand and just keep on flexing it all day long, because eventually it's going to wear your energy down and you ain't going to be able to do it. Well, you took a little bit of knowledge that you had in leverage and you said, well, I could do this all day long if I throw this extra physics in here, the physics of leverage, and then you were able to, with your finger, just be able to push and lift it off the floor.
Not only push and lift it off the floor with my fingers, but I could drink my coffee, smoke my cigarettes, and go to the bathroom, and it never stopped running.
See?
2 hours and 45 minutes. Drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, operating the machine, and never broke a sweat. And it was, I was out in the sun with no shade in the summertime. Temperature was kind of mild that day, about 74, 75 degrees, but never broke a sweat. And I was producing 140 watts of electricity for 2 hours and 45 minutes.
See?
And never broke a sweat, and only with my fingers.
And that's the key. You took the physics, your knowledge of the physics of leverage and mechanics and gears and such, and basically made you took them to the extreme of what could be done with that. And so you used them to your advantage. And that's
here's the thing. Wait a minute. When I measured the wattage, I didn't measure open circuit voltage and then closed circuit amperage. I had two multimeters on this thing. One was measuring the actual voltage going into the battery, the other one was measuring the actual amperage going into the battery at the exact same time.
Now
voltage times amperage is wattage, and that is the proper way to measure it. And that's exactly what I did, and it was 140 watts of electricity.
Imagine that device. Because when that weight finally comes down, when you lift it and it comes down and lands on the floor, imagine you got a piezoelectric pad under there that's going to use, that when that mass comes down and hits, it's going to flex it and then release a charge. And also on the same deal, wherever there's a gear or lever or something moving up and down, you got magnets that are going past coils and they're actually putting juice into the system. And you're grabbing energy from all different directions, and then you're funneling that energy into a battery bank that then in turn is using a solenoid to be the equivalent of what your finger's doing.
Right.
That's pushing that deal every so often. And so, because you didn't have to sit there and push it like one right after another, right? You got to wait for it to go through its whole process.
Right.
Well, in that time, you got all that charging time in between that you could actually charge up a battery that would in turn, when it got to a certain level, hit the switch and kick the solenoid out and be the electronic finger, so to speak.
Right.
And if that couldn't turn out to be something perpetual to where it was self-contained, I'd be surprised, because it don't take a lot of pressure for you to take your finger and push something out, and a lot of these solenoids out there really got some power to them. So, hey, it'd be worth looking into. You know.
Okay. The thing is, I had it hooked up with two multimeters. There was 11 volts going into the battery, and it was putting out 12.72 amps. So that was 7.2 amps. I mean, yes, I'm sorry, 12.72 amps at 11 volts is 140 watts.
Well, you know, if you set up a million, maybe a trillion dominoes in a row, you only got to use the force of one little tap on the first one in order to cause that domino effect all the way down. You'll knock a trillion, zillion, quadrillion, or whatever, the highest number you can count of dominoes in a row. And all you did is that one action, pow, and you started a domino effect, and you knocked all those dominoes down. So you just magnified that whatever pressure it took to tip that first domino multitudes times the energy that you just put in. Am I wrong?
Right.
Because the first one, all it took was just a little bit of energy to push the first one over, which then in turn fell into the second one and third one and fourth and on down through the line. And that one action dumped all those dominoes over on its side. I see, that's what I'm talking about taking the laws of physics and using them to your advantage. Otherwise, you would have had to go by each one of the dominoes and knock them over if they were placed too far apart. You know, you knock the first one over, and you got to knock the second all the way down the line, all the way through however many dominoes you got. But because the way you placed them, and the way that all you had to do is touch the first one, and the weight of the first one would knock the second one on down the line, there ain't no reason why that couldn't use that to your advantage. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
What if all those dominoes were on a hinge? Each one of them was on a hinge, and when that last domino fell, the weight of that domino fallen would flip a switch that would hit a solenoid that would drag all the dominoes right back up again.
or maybe the last one could hit a bowling ball that weighed 16 pounds and that was just barely balanced and dropped the bowling ball, and the bowling ball would reload everything. Therefore, you use the electricity to charge the person.
So, if you had some dominoes that had some magnets on it,
right.
Some coils all the way down the line, and as the magnets were falling, they were putting juice into a supercapacitor, and then when it finally got to the end of those dominoes, that supercapacitor was already fully charged enough to kick out all it takes is one punch of a solenoid to lift all them dominoes right back up, standing up, and then dump them again, and repeat that cycle. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, they've got solenoids out there that are about as big around as my finger, and only about half as long, that produce 22 to 27 pounds of force for a distance of 10 millimeters, or 1 centimeter.
Yep.
So you think about that a minute. And we're talking a very small amount of electricity for a millisecond.
That's all you need. Long enough to stand them dominoes up. And if you use leverage to do it, then you don't need as much energy to lift them all up.
Yeah, your electric locks in your car door. I mean, most of those produce anywhere from 20 to 25 pounds of force for a distance of an inch and a half.
So the
actual electricity used to lock or unlock your car door is so small. It's unbelievable. Totally unbelievable.
No, I honestly believe if you took and tried this experiment, and literally you could set up a big like 4x8 sheet of plywood worth of dominoes, and if you had it set up right, like I was talking about, you'd only have to be able to raise the one domino, which in turn would raise the one next in line to it. You could actually get this thing to keep going around in circles and tripping the switch that would hit that solenoid, that would push them all back up again and let them fall down the next. You see what I'm saying? And the dominoes, you could drill out the sides and put little ceramic magnets or neo magnets, and build your best coil system, you know, a little tiny coil system that would actually pick up as that went across there real quick, you know, a tiny bit of voltage or whatever, and store it in that supercapacitor. So, you know, that's not defying any of the laws of physics, because, you know, anytime you take a magnet across the coil of wire, you induce a current. Now, is that going to be a lot of current? Are you going to be able to run your house with it? No, but you could prove a concept. So, that's what I'm talking about. You know, I'm not saying about defying the laws of physics. I'm taking, this is what we know about physics so far. Why can't we take each one of these independently and use them, use the to the maximum potential and be able to do something incredible with it.
Right.
This is where I get frustrated sometimes in the alternative energy community, because they're always like, you know, with static electricity, you know, what can you do with static electricity? Well, you can do a lot with static electricity if you understand it. You know, if you understand voltage and certain materials that interact with electrons, you know, like the LED, it doesn't take a lot of current to run an LED. As a matter of fact, they'll burn out real easy if you don't put a resistor on them.
Right.
But nonetheless, you can light an LED wirelessly just by the electron flow in the air, you know, and when the electrons and the photons interact with each other. Somebody told me in my video here recently, the one I did called Bic Lighter Flashlight, somebody told me there ain't no photons. There ain't no such thing as photons, whatever. I don't know. But ain't that...
that is funny.
But ain't that what science says? Science says there's photons. Science says there's electrons. I don't know. I ain't seen either one of them that I know of. But nonetheless, that's what science says. So that's the terminology we're using to explain the thing that's going on. Maybe sometime down the line, somebody will get a grip on what's fact or fiction or whatever, and advancements like you were talking about in science, and we'll have a better understanding down the line. But for the moment, that's the explanation that science gives, so that's the explanation that I use. So, you know, I told them in my reply comment, I said, well, it could be there ain't no electrons either, but... nonetheless, that's what science says it is right now, so that's basically what I use. So, you know, you run into that kind of stuff. But if you take...
Well, maybe it is something else, but no one's found it, and no one's come up with a theory for it yet. And so at the same time, what if they did find what it was? And it's not really an electron, but something else. So we'd have to invent another word to describe it, correct?
Yeah. You know, I just thought of an idea how to stand those dominoes back up.
Okay.
So, you got a solenoid, right? If you put a magnet on the bottom of that solenoid, and you got a sliding rod underneath the dominoes, and when the solenoid kicks out, it slides that rod, which slides the magnets up underneath the dominoes and stands them back up using the magnetic force. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and so instead of it pulling, when the solenoid pulls back, instead of it pulling back, it will actually, when it gets to a certain point, the lever, the entire deal will drop down. And that way it pulls it away from the domino, so it doesn't accidentally tip them back over.
Right.
Or, you know, you could use that for the actual tipping of it. Who knows? But I can honestly see mechanically you being able to do that, to basically take a cheapo set of dominoes and install some maggots in strategic places and use the solenoid to stand them all back up again using magnetism and be able to tip one, and then it resets itself. See what I mean? Using the energy that you collect as these things are doing their work falling. And when they're falling, they're actually doing work. So, you know, it's a thought. It's worth looking into.
Well,
huh?
I say, well, worth looking into. I mean, dang on. How do you know for sure if you don't try?
Yep. And as far as the reason for the hinges, is that you obviously wouldn't want the dominoes falling out of place. So you put the hinges in there because that's another piece of physics, and you can control the fall of the domino.
Right?
So you got little tiny hinges on there that will allow that domino to fall one way and one way only. That's using physics to your advantage, because now you're controlling where it goes. Then you use the magnets to literally set the dominoes up using the solenoid at the other side. And so the energy that you grab as these things are falling, which you could grab it in multiple different ways, you know, one being the magnets going past coils, or, you know, piezoelectrics. When the doggone things are falling down, they're slapping a little piezoelectric crystal and basically putting a charge into the system. So you have the domino coming down, slapping another domino, picking up a charge from a piezoelectric, which then in turn slaps the next one all the way down the line until it finally gets to the end, and the last domino trips the switch that hits the solenoid and sets them all right back up again.
Yep.
It could be done. Now, I did a nifty little gizmo where I made a combination solar, it's going to be another one of my physics toy videos, where I took a, made a solar motor that inside this thing has capacitors. And so what happens is it's got four solar panels all the way around it. It's like a cube, and it's got four solar panels all the way around it. And when the sun shines, it kicks on these really small electric motors with their airplane deals on there. And each one of them's facing in the direction that you want it to pull. So what happens is when the sun turns on, it turns on the airplane motor, which creates thrust behind it and puts the forward momentum and brings the rotor past the tipping point and starts to circulate around. By that time, the one on the other side's already pulled its, used its thrust to pull it back over to the same tipping point. And then when it gets to spin around because of the sun, if a wind kicks up, there's spins on this thing that will actually grab that wind and actually speed up the propellers themselves. And when those propellers are, because the two motors are connected together through the capacitor, it actually puts a charge into the capacitor, which runs the motor on the other side. So even without the sun, on a windy day, the wind will spin the propeller, which will in turn charge a capacitor and run the motor on the opposite side. And so when it gets up fast enough, it actually produces thrust behind both of these motors and does the same exact thing. So on a windy day, it'll run. On a sunny day, it'll run. And when the sun ain't out and the wind isn't out, I've got other deals that I'm adding to it that will work like a pulse-style motor and use anything from thermoelectrics to UV light or infrared light, anything in that nature's already doing to keep this thing running constantly, no matter what's happening in nature. It's a pretty nifty gizmo.
Yeah.
I actually got myself in trouble because I took a friend up to Sedalia to the Social Security office up here, and I had he went inside to do his paperwork, so I had some time on my hands. I got bored, so I set this out on top of this deal because it was windy out and the clouds were out and the sun wasn't coming through, so I figured I'd test the wind portion of it. And so I set it up on the sign up there at the Social Security office, and the wind blowed, got the fans going, which turned the other one, and it starts spinning around. So I'm standing there in amazement, and the next thing I know, here comes a doggone security over there looking at me like I'm a terrorist. He's like, "Can I help you with something?" And I'm saying, "Oh, I'm checking out my science toy." Yeah, one of my friends inside there, you know, and he's like, well, you know, people are looking at you when they're driving by and all that and whatever, you know. I guess he pretty much thought I was a terrorist and want me to put it away or whatever, so he asked me to put it back in the car. But as I was explaining to him how it worked, he's all like really interested. I wish my kid would do stuff like that, you know. But I said, well, I'm going to post it online and so you could show it to him and then be able to maybe get him excited about it. And that's the reason why I've been doing these physics toys videos, because you could use them for teaching and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, it basically is it shows what you can use physics for, different ways of moving energy around, that kind of stuff. And hopefully spark some ideas in people's minds to do some new stuff. See what I mean?
Yep, I do.
So, anyway, I got a nifty gizmo, and the doggone thing works, and I'm happy about it, and I'm going to keep adding to it. And the way that I add this stuff to, because it's a lot of mass setting on bearings, so the bearings are holding the mass, so I don't have to overcome that. So I used a bit of physics in that. You can put a lot of weight on, you know, a set of bearings as long as you don't exceed the friction of, you know, what's actually going to start tearing that thing apart.
Right.
And so those bearings will hold a lot of weight that you couldn't otherwise turn with a force, so like wind. You know, if you had just a solid rod on, you know, in a hole, You'd take you more wind power to actually turn that. But since we put it on bearings now, it takes less energy to turn that now. You see where I'm going with that?
Yes, I do. It's the same thing as when I built this Savonius wind turbine, which I have several videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, I got it down to where so well balanced and so well the bearings in it were so friction free, this thing will turn at less than 1/10 of a mile an hour. Now that doesn't mean it's going to make a lot of electricity at 1/10 of a mile an hour, but that does mean that in other words, you build a wind turbine, the turbine itself not producing electricity, the less wind it takes to turn it, the more efficient it's going to be. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, if you take a wind turbine that's not hooked up to an alternator or a generator of any kind, and it's just say, for example, it takes 3 miles an hour just to get it to turn. Well, that's a lot of energy being wasted, because now you get it up to 10 miles an hour, but you're only getting the energy, it's producing electricity, but 3 miles per hour of that wind is being wasted just to overcome the friction of getting it to start up to start with. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, one of the things that people overlook all the time, which impresses me every single time I see it. If you look on top of people's roofs, you'll see these turbines that basically are used to heat or cool down an attic. Well, it's pretty cool how these things work, because they're the way that they're set, they are so balanced that you can almost just breathe on them and they'll start turning. Right?
Yeah.
And so when the heat pressure builds up in your attic, even on a day when the doggone wind isn't blowing, which these things will pick up the slightest amount of wind and start turning these things, but when the heat pressure inside your attic gets to a certain extent, it will literally start turning that, creating a draft, sucking the heat out of the doggone roof. So
exactly.
Those things right there are like a really prime example of using physics to your advantage, because there's no electric motor on them, but these things are always turning.
And they're practically friction-free because they use glass bearings.
Yeah. It's pretty doggone impressive as far as I'm concerned. And so knowing that, if you take these things and you pick them up, they got some mass to them. If you pick the rotor, the turbine itself up by itself, it's got some mass to it. And so what you can learn from that is that the centrifugal force of this thing spinning that mass around, once you get a mass going, you know, it actually produces a lot of power that you could literally use that power. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? Like, the merry-go-rounds that the kids are on. Alright? Yeah. Now, if that thing wasn't on a bearing, you couldn't go over there and pick it up. Take 5 men in the truck to pick that thing up. You know? Because it's so doggone heavy. But because it's sitting on the bearing, it's riding around on that bearing, you can spin it really easy so a kid can get on there and start spinning that thing around and other kids on there hanging on going for a joyride. But what's really cool about these things is once that centrifugal force kicks in and that thing's getting going, man, the laws of physics kick in. Have you ever tried to stop a spinning merry-go-round? Man, those things will drag you through the dirt.
They will.
So,
oh, man.
Now that we know that, what if you took that same merry-go-round and put some big sails on that thing so that it would catch the slightest amount of wind like a sailboat, and this thing's spinning around in circles, and underneath there you got a generator head that once the centrifugal force gets going on that momentum and that mass creates the force necessary to turn the transmission that will in turn speed up and then kick the generator head on?
Well, you just expect with an idea. Huh. You take a merry-go-round like that, put a really small alternator under it, and then put a whole bunch of blinking LED lights on it. Huh. I think it would get some kids really interested to ride it even more. Don't you think?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that you could put that out on the playground and those kids would sit there and charge up batteries that would run the lights that they see with at night.
That's my point. If you put the lights on it and then let the kids play after dark, I mean, they're going to be playing, but you got a generator that produces more electricity than the lights use.
Yeah.
You get the lights on it, you turn it into a game instead of having the kids there riding a stationary bicycle, to turn the generator. You make it into a toy that uses very, very little electricity, but it produces a lot.
I have been trying in my neighborhood.
To keep, have fun charging batteries.
Yep.
About that.
I have been trying to find in my neighborhood some place that has tore apart an old park that has one of them old-style merry-go-rounds. If anybody knows where I can find one of them old-style, them big old heavy metal merry-go-rounds, I want to get one of those things. I want to put it out in the middle of the field. I want to modify it using some sails off of some windsurf boards. You know those big, pointy, triangular-looking ones?
Yeah.
And I want to put a generator head, like one of these motors off of these direct-drive washing machines, and have this thing sitting out in my yard, out in my field with the wind sails up, and then for days whenever it's not windy enough outside to push that, which I've seen these guys out there on these windsurfers, they not only go north, south, they go east and west, and they can steer these sails wherever they want to go and be able to steer that surfboard any direction they want. Almost like it's got a steering wheel on it.
Take the spindle and hub from a front end of an automobile.
Yeah.
You fix it where you can mount it on something vertically. Then you put your rim on it, and then from the rim, you can go ahead and build your platform just the way you want.
Yeah, I need a big steel plate for that.
Yep.
Because the steel plate is what we want. In all the steam engines and even internal combustion engines, you use a flywheel because of the centrifugal force. When the flywheel gets to spinning up, and that mass produces a lot of energy that you can use to turn things. And so that's basically part of the physics that I want to use for that deal. And also, on the same merry-go-round, I want to put solar panels on there so that even when the wind isn't doing its job, you know, I can literally use the sun to turn a motor that will continuously keep this thing spinning.
Right.
And once you get it up to speed, it ain't going to take much energy to keep it spinning.
Oh, Lord, no.
And you could actually set this thing up so that when the wind dies down, the sails actually go down like an umbrella, so they're not resisting the electric motor as it's trying to spin around. You can set it up on an automated system. When sun, when the power shuts, the wind shuts down. You got a little little blade up there that catches the little turbine that catches the wind. And when that power shuts down, the wind stops blowing enough to actually turn or to push them sails, they'll automatically collapse down. When it spins back up, it'll energize a motor that'll set them right back out where they were. It'd be such a simple concept. These the bottoms of them being on tracks and stuff, you know.
Right.
You could get this thing to run no matter what, man, and not defy any of the known laws of physics in the process. See, that's what I'm talking about, and that's what I've been talking about on Mad Science Forever and a Day. You know, people, when they come around and start mouthing off about, oh, well, you can't do that because the second law of thermodynamics and this and that, and they sound all intelligent while they're using this high-tech terminology, but they're making themselves look foolish because you got a two-stage oscillator that you can lift a heavy amount of weight on the other side just by putting your finger to that deal.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Without even breaking a sweat and do other things at the same time. In fact, I've set it up. I haven't made a video of it, but I set it up where I can put a chair right there. I can operate it with my feet while I'm on my computer. I don't have to look at anything.
So, imagine you got this mass going around. How much pressure does it actually take to push that deal in order to get that thing going?
How many people have you seen when, when they sit down and talk, they're sitting there still shaking their foot real fast?
A lot of people.
It takes less energy than that.
All
right, so... Two-stage oscillator. So you can actually operate this thing with your feet. A nervous person that has to move their feet while they're sitting there watching television or on the internet or whatever, they can sit right there and operate a two-stage oscillator because there's more power than their computer uses.
So let's take ludicrous mad science to a higher level. So now we got my merry-go-round generator. We got your two-stage oscillator. Off the side of that merry-go-round is a little arm that comes around like a cam lobe and hits that lever like you would be if it was your finger.
Right.
All right. Yeah. And so maybe the merry-go-round's too big to get the cycle right. So we put another cam lobe on strategically around this thing. And so as this thing's spinning around every so often, it does what your finger does. It lets your two-stage oscillator go through the cycle and then hits again. And, you know, you ain't really took nothing away from the merry-go-round because the merry-go-round's got more centrifugal force and more mass behind it than's necessary to actually push that little cam as it go by. You could do this. You ever seen that game Mousetrap?
Yeah.
That is such a cool game, how it, you know, the ball rolls down through and goes across this and kicks this lever, which then flips this over and then eventually drops the trap on the mouse.
Right.
Imagine if you started off building a giant kind of version like that. I need to make a collection of videos out there where people do these deals like this. Man, you could go on forever and a day. And how big would this thing have to be before you could actually classify it as perpetual motion? Because it's using everything under the sun, including the sun, to get something done. And it's just constantly, you know, maybe doing all kinds of cool stuff. You know,
they have words for that, and I'm not sure, but isn't it called a collage?
I don't know what they're called. I can't remember.
But I saw one on YouTube. The guy, it was in about a 5,000 or 6,000 square foot warehouse, and he used to go near every square foot of it. He had one. That thing would run for like 10, 15, 20 minutes. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, see, this is what really gets me, is that people always say, well, you can't put enough energy in to do this. It's got too much resistance. It's got all this and that and all that. But look, if I got a windmill going on and the wind stops blowing, there's still a bit of time before that windmill stops turning because of the centrifugal force and the mass going on. So
right.
In the process of that happening, I can capture some of that energy and send it back around to itself just by, you know, using other forces out there. Like, for example, if, let's say I got a solar panel setting up. The wind stopped blowing, but my solar panel keeps the motor turning, so it doesn't stop. And so the next time the wind blows, it doesn't have to be very much wind blowing in order to do it. So I just took two things that was going on in nature already, and this windmill hasn't stopped turning. You see what I mean? I got out there in my yard a deal that I call Free Thinkers that I had done a series on, and I need to actually get up and do an update on Free Thinkers deal. But the key about this whole deal is, even though it's not going to run my house or anything like that, that thing has been running for, gosh, seems like over a year now. And all it's doing is grabbing energy from every direction. It's grabbing galvanic action with out of the dirt. It's grabbing Earth's battery from chemistry in the dirt. It's grabbing solar. It's grabbing wind. It's grabbing radio frequencies. And you go out there every single night, it's still lit up. You go out there every single day, it's still ticking. It's still pulsing that big old 7-foot Tesla coil on the other side. And it's been going.
I saw that the last time I was up there.
Yep.
Last fall. Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. And the thing is, you've got two solar panels down there laying on the ground. They're not even insulated from the ground.
Nope. Been rained on.
Those that are hailstone damaged.
Yep.
They still work.
Been rained on, snowed on, frozen, and everything under the sun. And cats walking on them, and they're all cracked up, and they're still producing power.
The only thing I didn't see out there, and you probably correct that by now, and that's just putting a balloon on a piece of pipe, not a balloon, but a piece of copper wire, and sucking energy right out of the air. You know, put up a 20, 30-foot piece of pipe, and just a plastic pipe and a little wire on it.
Well, I'd contemplated on that, but the problem that I see is that I'd have to keep replacing helium. However, if I could get a really thin, like a fish tank hose, and use a large enough balloon, like for a hot air balloon,
right,
and build a heat box out there that would transfer, you know, because heat rises, it would transfer heat up to that hose and eventually fill that balloon up, that balloon would stay aloft when it was hot. You could actually wind a wire around that hose as it goes up, so that basically the hose would be acting as a chimney, letting all that heat get up into that balloon and keeping it, you know, hot inside the balloon so that it would stay aloft longer. And you could actually make the balloon itself out of a specific material that when the sun beats on it, it would actually cause it to heat up inside, keeping it hot as well. Plus, if you was worried about the pressure of the sun and the heat rupture in the balloon, you could actually put a pop-off valve in there to let some pressure out when it got to a certain amount of pressure before the balloon ever popped.
You know, here's the thing, you wouldn't have to use helium. Just black plastic trash bags.
Yeah.
Passing them together, put a little bit of air in them, put them out in the sun, the air expands because of the black plastic. It expands and gets lighter, and next thing you know, the balloon goes up in the air. You make it out of black plastic. So when the sun comes up, it's really low to the ground, or maybe even laying on the ground. But as the sun comes up and warms it up, it goes right back up in the air in the daytime. You're not wasting any helium or not anything at all.
See, that's a brilliant idea. And if you actually had it set somewhere where, you know, the when it cooled itself down and finally fell to the ground, it's not going to get tangled up in any trees or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you could actually put it away from the system so it didn't get caught in any propellers on wind turbines or anything like that. Just put it out by itself, and you got enough length for it to stay aloft. But that's a brilliant idea.
Really, Shaliz, you don't have to go that high. What was it? What did you tell me? 150, 200 feet gives you like 2,000 volts?
Well, that's what atmospheric group's doing. They got four 250-foot poles, and they got a wire that goes all the way around each one of them and goes down into their deal, and it brings out 2,000 volts, which they're running through a large capacitor bank and coming out with about 9,000 volts on the other side.
Well, what about just building a frame that's roughly 20 feet high?
Yeah.
Just run your frame, just a two-part pole up 20 feet high, and then another stronger pole across those two poles that are vertical, maybe 20 foot apart, and then the wire you're running is very small anyway, so you run off a wire every 6 or 8 inches all the way across. Well, now all of a sudden you've got 40 or anywhere from 30 to 40 pieces of wire going up 20 foot, and you only, just say for example, you're only getting 5 volts on each one. Yeah. 40.
There's a YouTuber out there called the Russian Hacker or something like that, and he does all kinds of science stuff. But he did a video similar. There is actually on the market a balloon that is like a thermal balloon that will inflate itself because it's when it gets hot, and it'll stay floating.
Right.
I'm going to have to look back through my deal and see if I can find that video. But if I can get a hold of a couple of those, it'd be worthwhile to try it out and get some thin wire and take some measurements off of that to see, you know, how much actually comes down of it.
Mm.
Because if you got thin enough wire, I'm trying to sit here and think, because you don't want the wire to be so thin that the pressure of the balloon snaps the wire, but yet at the same time you have to be able to lift it up. But if you go in the fishing section, they got what's called spider wire. And spider wire is a fishing string that is like, you can get it in different thicknesses, but the equivalence of what would be a 50-pound test is like a fraction of the size of what the regular filament version of the, you know, the plastic or whatever version of the fishing line.
I really don't think you need to possess it, because you take, like, for example, 30-gauge wire.
Yeah.
30-gauge wire, a pound of that stuff is over 1,000 feet.
Well, what I was trying to say about that, though, is this stuff is so super strong. I've got some on my fishing pole, and it's been on there for years. You could pull a log in out of the lake with that stuff, because that's how strong it is. But it's really, really lightweight. And so if you could infuse that lightweight string with wire, then it wouldn't take much to lift it off the ground. Even if you had 1,000 foot of it, it wouldn't take that much to lift it off the ground, because it's really lightweight but super strong.
You know, 1,000 feet. Now you're talking up in the thousands of volts, too.
Yeah.
You were talking 2,000 volts at 150, 200 feet. So now you're going 5 times that daggone distance. When you're talking 10, 15, 20,000 volts.
Yeah, lightning bolts being dragged down.
Really? Really?
But either way, you know, it's still, you're not defying any of the laws of physics. You're just using those physics to your advantage. You know,
right.
You got to have so much mass to be able to raise so much mass. That kind of stuff. You know, so much air pressure inside of a balloon. If the air inside there is lighter than the air outside, we know that's going to rise. Now you measure the force, which would probably be easy enough to turn the scale upside down and have that string took to the lever and see how many pounds of force that balloon's actually producing. And so once you know how many pounds of force, you can go from there of how high you can go with how much string it would take to go by the weight of that string and the wire together. It ain't like we couldn't figure it out.
Exactly.
So that's my whole point, man. You know, I like this. I just subscribed to this channel with this physics, because I like the way that they show it in a mechanical fashion of how things are actually working. You can literally see on this induction coil how, you know, induction works. And so with that said, that's another bit of knowledge that if somebody wants to sit around and watch these videos, they might learn a few things about that and come up with a lot of ideas. It's not, like I said, I don't know how many times I gotta say it. Not trying to define the known laws of physics, not trying to get over unity, not trying to get 0 point, just trying to prove once and for all, without a shadow of doubt, which I think I've done time and time again, that energy is free.
Now, so
people are gonna argue about how, you know, well, you gotta pay for this device, so that part's not free. Well, so what? You invest in it, you got it. Now you don't have to pay for the energy that you're utilizing, so what's the point? I mean, you put a wind turbine up. Once that wind turbine's up, did you get your money's worth the first year or the second year or maybe the third or fourth, tenth year? I've seen windmills has been up for 100 years.
No, I've said over 100 times on the same show right here. There is no such thing as energy that is not free. It's just you need to build a machine to take the free energy and turn it into the type of energy you actually need to use. There's many different kinds of energy, but they can be changed in form, size, and shape, you know, and direction.
Yeah.
So you just take free energy and build a machine that you can use it. My God, I mean, how many hundreds of years have we been using sailboats? The wind blows free, but you have to build a boat and put sails on it to utilize it.
Yeah. You want to make a sandwich and you ain't got no bread, you got to use some energy and some resources to go get some bread. But once you bring that bread and you use that energy from that bread is going to give you the carbohydrates necessary for your body to do what it does. You know, I actually had to put some work into it, but, you know, where did the materials for the bread come from?
Right.
It came from nature. So essentially, you know, you had to pay money to get the bread. That's okay. Sorry about your luck, but that's the way society works. We pay people for their work, you know. We pay people for their effort so that we could actually go out there and grow the wheat ourselves and mill it and turn it into our own bread. And,
well, hey, what about cattails?
Yeah.
Those little things that grow in swampy ground, really wet ground, to grow up and have that big round, brown cigar-looking thing on it?
Yeah.
You take those and bust them up, they fuzz out, right?
Yeah.
You will take that fuzzy stuff and pound it between two rocks, and it'll turn into a dough that you can bake into bread. That's free.
Well, there you go, man.
I guess your feet wet, you know, getting them, but they're there, they're free. Turn right around, you dig pull them up and get the roots out. Straight the bark off the roots in the dirt, make them in an oven, grind them up, and you got coffee.
Well, nature's provided all kinds of stuff, man. We got more resources than we need. It's just the way that society thinks about stuff, you know, and alternative energy. You know, they talk about, I actually wrote a letter to the President of the United States. Still ain't got no response, probably never will get a response, and if I do get a response, it'll probably be one of those stamped letters that says, thank you for your message, don't know what it said because I didn't read it, but hey, go USA, right? With a stamp of the president's signature on it. So, you know, maybe I won't get no response, but I'm trying to tell him the same thing I'm trying to tell everybody else in the world. We got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to literally give the world what the world said that the world needed. They said we need clean, renewable, alternative energy sources, and so we're standing here telling them how it can be done and trying to bring people to the table, and if we get the president on board with the deal, I mean, we could help everybody around the world, man. You imagine putting some nifty devices over there in third world countries. I hate it when they call them third world countries because they're all in the same world, you know, but nonetheless, you put a merry-go-round on the over there for the kids to play on. You give them the food necessary to keep them energized, and they go out there, they ride around on that merry-go-round. While they're riding around on the merry-go-round, they're actually charging up batteries so everybody can have light when it gets dark. So, what do you lost? You see what I mean?
Let me tell you something. You take a kid out on a farm, hand them a hoe, and have them go out there and hoe grass out of the bean field or around the cotton plant. That's work. But you turn them loose in the afternoon after the work is over, give them a good hot meal, and take them out and show them that merry-go-round with all them blinking lights when they're running it, and they will work three times as hard having fun and making electricity for the house at night.
Yeah. You know, and some jerk's going to come by and say, well, you're just trying to exploit the children. No, we're giving them exercise. You're getting electricity. They're having fun. You know, I mean, the swing sets. Kids get on there and swing for hours, man. You could use that motion of the swing set to light up the playground
light. Right there.
Huh?
A swing set. There's your two-stage oscillator right there.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
he's sitting there swinging, and you could actually put a little kick pad out there as he's coming out there. You know, he pushes off from the kick pad to go a little bit better, and, you know, produces yet even more power. You can light up the whole playground for him, keep the batteries charged up using solar and wind and kid power and every kind of, you know, force out there. I mean, if you're going to be using the force anyway, why not utilize the benefits? See what I mean?
Exactly.
Now, they turn the windshield wipers on your car, but you could actually utilize that force of the windshield wipers going back and forth to run some magnets back and forth across the coil wire. You know, is it gonna charge your battery up like, you know, massive? No, but it's actually trickle charging it. So, and that trickle charge is less energy that you have to put in to keep that battery charged. So if the motion's going on anyway and you're tapping into it, you're not defying any of the known laws of physics, or everybody's all, well, you're just going to add another force and create another drag and this and blah, blah. You know, negative Nancy's make me nauseated. They make my head hurt.
There you go.
I had a friend come over and I showed him my nifty gizmo. And right out of the gate, he starts pointing out everything that's wrong with it. And he said, well, that's not free energy. That's not over unity. That's not... Why? That's a waste of time. And all that I'm sitting there telling him, I said, look, man. I said, number one, it's not intended on being free energy. It's not intended on really doing any kind of serious power generation. What it is intended on doing is being able to use to teach people some physics, because you not only have the physics of the centrifugal force, but you got the physics of the wind power, you got the physics of the solar power, the physics of thrust, and by the time it's all said and done, there'll be a whole lot more to add to it as well. And so in one toy, there's so many different pieces of physics that could be taught, including the bearing system that it's riding on, being able to hold up that mass and how it is that the thrust can actually turn that mass using gravity to all you have to do is get that fan to blowing, and that fan creates thrust, which starts pushing it one way. It gets past the tipping point of that mass because it's a block, and it will literally pull it around to the next one in line.
You know, what you're saying here is that you're teaching, by building the toys, you're teaching kids the physics. Now, you got a 500-pound log, and it's laying on the ground, and you tell this kid to move that big old log. What are they going to do? They're going to go there and try to pick it up. Well, no. You get another stick, you teach them how to use a lever, and they roll it where they want it to go.
Exactly.
Or, yeah, they roll it down to the pond, throw it in the pond, and hook a rope to it, and a 5-year-old kid could move that log.
So,
especially what you're talking about, your magnetic bearings. So you can take something that weighs 500, 600, 700 pounds, turn it into a merry-go-round. The kids can get it going and get it playing. Well, with that 500 pounds actually turning in a circle, you have a flywheel. Duh. You put lights on it. LEDs, so they don't burn hardly any electricity at all. Just say, for example, they're burning 1 amp, but the damn go merry-go-round with 3 kids pushing it, it's producing 5 amps.
Yeah.
But kids are having fun. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, he also mentioned the fact that...
So they play with it and enjoy it. It's not work.
He also mentioned the fact that the solar panels... he said, why would you want to rotate solar panels? Because you're going to lose efficiency because they'll be in and out of the sun. And I pointed out that underneath it, I had this reflective arch that is keeping the sun on it at all times. No matter where that solar panel is, all four of those are getting some sunlight. And so, before people start denying stuff and rejecting the idea, they need to actually look into the mechanics of what's going on.
Right.
you could scale this up to a large scale and actually get some really serious power generation out of it using nothing more than the laws of physics to do what you want it to do. And the other thing about it is that the bearings on there, see, there's a version of this out there that you can buy that is sitting on magnetic bearings where it's actually doing the levitation. It's got the one pin that holds it so it don't fly away from the magnets, and it's floating on the magnetic field, and it's got solar power, and it basically uses a pulse style motor to turn it. I sent, there's a video or a link somewhere I got that I want to get one of these things for teaching wise, but nonetheless, I deliberately made mine to have to work harder in order to get the same amount of work done. Because what I'm trying to point out here is you can do it with the magnetic bearings, you can get it to turn and all that kind of stuff, but what's more impressive is if you go using the laws of physics and can go past whatever friction, whatever weight mass, and using air, like your two-stage oscillator, you know, the leverage, you got the leverage, it's a counterbalance, you don't have to pull as much force because you got all that mass and you're pulling that big arm down, which in turn is lifting the weight instead of you going over there hurting your back.
Yeah, I've had a couple. I didn't have very many, but I had two or three people that made negative comments about it. Well, look how much energy it takes to get it going. Okay, fine. It takes a lot of energy. The thing is, once you get it going, don't let it stop. It's like that locomotive train, the diesel electric train that we use in the United States. I mean, it takes unreal power, unbelievable power to get that thing up to 60 miles an hour. I mean, it's pulling 250 coal cars full of coal. Yep. That's unbelievable power to get it. But once it gets up there, it takes almost no energy to keep it going.
That's right, and it takes about 5 miles to stop.
Exactly, it does. It's about 5 miles to stop. Now, here's the next thing. They don't have to stop for stoplights. They don't have to stop for stop signs. Therefore, they can move 40 tons a product, not train, product, 40 tons, 60 miles on 1 gallon of diesel fuel.
Yep.
But it takes them 10 gallons of diesel fuel just to get it going. Not up 60 miles an hour, just to get it going. Once it's moving, then it takes less per mile to get the speed up. But once they hit that speed and lock her down, that's it. It's almost unbelievable how little fuel they need. Again, the laws of physics. A body at rest tends to stay at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. A body in motion tends to stay in motion unless acted upon by an outside force. With a train, there is no friction. You've got steel wheels on steel rails. You've got the locomotive is breaking all the air. All the rest of the cars behind it, it's only side friction. Lord have mercy, if they were to make their coal cars slick on the sides, on the outside, just with some sheet metal, they'd probably be able to move that 40 tons 80 miles.
Yeah, and if they put all their doggone train stations on the top of a hill, then whenever they park that thing at night, you know, because they use the centrifugal the forward motion of the thing to literally make it up the hill. And once they park it up on top of the hill, chock the wheels so they ain't going to go nowhere, load it all up, and then whenever they're ready to go, they can cut down that amount of fuel that's necessary to get it started just by using the gravitational pull to allow the thing to roll downhill and build up the speed.
Now, you were talking about static electricity a while ago.
Yeah.
Now, I realize it would cost hundreds and hundreds of million dollars to do this. But just think over the years what it would save them if they made the sides of the coal cars and the box cars smooth and slick so there was no real genuine air friction. Now, they paint that with a insulating type paint, and then they paint over top of that with a positive plastic on one side and a negative plastic on the other. So now as they're going down, they've got air friction over here creating static electricity deliberately. More than enough to run the cotton picking train once it's up to power, once it's up to speed.
Well, to make that even better,
energy they need.
To make that even better, on the very top of the doggone thing, you could actually put a thin layer of two different types of metals and create a big giant thermal conductor on the top that would you know, like the Peltier elements, you know, when the sun's beating down on the,
And you've seen the trains as they go down the tracks, they're constantly bobbing back and forth and back and forth and bobbing up and down and up and down. Piezo crystals.
Yeah.
In the cushioning system, in between the springs and stuff like that. A train could make more energy than it takes for it to move. Now, it would take a lot of energy to get it going, but once it was up to speed, it would make its own energy.
Yeah. Well, there's all kinds of different ways in order to get a lot more force. I mean, you could literally use hydraulic pressure to get the thing turning. Once you once you got it going, you know, then that's all you need, because if you get that much mass moving, it's hard to stop it. And let's say, like, you got these hydraulic cylinders. You know how the old steam engines used to work?
Right.
Well, they had like a big giant piston on the side, and it gets going and it's turning this big wheel. If you had a hydraulic cylinder on that wheel, you could literally take that doggone wheel and start to turn it, and once you got going up the deal, you could release the pressure and actually start to use that forward motion to, instead of exploding the hydraulic cylinder from the pressure of this thing going too fast, you could use that doggone wheel and the forward motion as a pump to circulate fluid through whatever it is you want to circulate it through. So you release the pressure at the time when the thing starts going forward and allow the centrifugal force of the big giant steel wheel and the forward motion of the weight of the mass moving forward to take that and turn that into a pump. That pump could then in turn go around and turn a turbine, which in turn would turn a generator and power up some battery banks.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So without even burning any fuel, you'd be able to get that thing going using what we already know about hydraulic. If you got a positive displacement pump, you would be surprised at how much pressure you can build up with the least amount of energy pushed into that thing. I've seen electric motors on hydraulic pumps that run off of 12 volts. I've seen electric winches that'll pull a car out of a ditch running off of a car battery. You know? They're out there.
I have seen hundreds of little kids that didn't weigh 30 pounds, 30, 35 pounds, walking around with tennis shoes on, and every time they took a step, lights would flash.
Yep.
How much energy are we talking about here? I mean, a train weighs tons and tons and tons, one car? I mean, come on, man. And it's bouncing up and down on the track, it's wobbling back and forth, and you got all these springs under there. I mean, you couldn't put piezo crystals under that and make electricity?
They got jacks, 2-ton and above jacks, 1-ton, 2-ton jacks that literally use hydraulic pressure, and you can sit there and crank this thing with your hand, and you can raise up a dump truck,
all right? Sure, I used to have a 100-ton hydraulic jack.
Yeah, well, the point is, you couldn't lift that without that doggone jack. You'd never get it off the ground. But the fact is that you're using physics, that hydraulic. All you're doing is sitting there cranking this one handle and squirting pressure inside that cylinder, which is pushing the piston out the other side, pushing the rod and raising the doggone truck off the ground. I've seen dump trucks that were full of gravel, people changing flat tires on them, you know.
Right.
One man was able to lift a dump truck using physics. Now, if you can lift a dump truck using physics, why couldn't you get a train started using physics without having...
Back that up a minute. It wasn't just one man. He was only using one hand.
Yeah. So, there you go, man.
A 15-year-old kid could operate that jack and lift that thing on truck.
We're sitting here showing you that you can use physics to do amazing things, and if something is really heavy and a little 15-year-old kid can push the jack and get that thing to raise up off the ground, that's pretty impressive, man.
Yep.
So, not trying to define...
Thank you. If you really think about it, I mean, shut your eyes and think about it. A 15-year-old kid picking up a loaded dump truck that weighs 30 tons. That's 60,000 pounds, and it's a 15-year-old kid.
Yep.
And we're talking a four-eyed geek 15-year-old.
Yeah, don't even have to be muscle-bound.
Oh, hell no. Excuse my French. Sorry about that.
But either way, think about what we're saying here. Utilizing the laws of physics to your advantage, you can literally build the devices necessary to work in perfect harmony with nature. You know, these little solar panels that they're made in China, I love the Chinese because when they make stuff, they make it good. You know, and you hear all this stuff about how, well, you know, Chinese make cheapo stuff. Well, it's funny, this guy who's in big industry sales and manufacturing over there was saying, well, you know, when the corporations come over, they want us to make them as cheap as possible, so we cut corners and they get what they get. But if they really want to make something good, we'll make something good for them. But they don't want it to last.
You know, they used to ship a lot of actual junk over here, but they learned the junk doesn't sell very good. So they started making quality stuff.
Well, they do
make some quality stuff. You can get some trash, but those are the people that are just starting out. They just need to learn that nobody wants trash.
These little solar panels that I got right here, I got one sitting on my table, and that little LED's been lit up. You know, it's just using waste energy off of this deal. I could put a million of these on my floor if I could fit them on the floor, and I could capture all the light energy that's coming around. You know, there's no limitations. I'm not going to make the light on the ceiling dim just because I captured the energy that was wasted off of that bulb. I can put as many of those as necessary to light the whole floor up if I want. But they make them so sensitive. I was able to use a doggone big lighter and light that lighter up and make that thing bright, you know?
Yep.
And so, think about this. So you're out there and it's dark outside, the wind ain't blowing, so your wind turbines ain't going anywhere, the sun ain't out, so you ain't got no doggone power going to your batteries, and you need to charge your batteries up. Well, you go outside, you get you some firewood, you build you a campfire next to your solar panel, and you charge your batteries up. Huh.
Yep.
Who'd have thunk it?
Really? You know, Buddy and I have had many, many discussions over the pros and cons of your propeller, your horizontal wind turbines, and your verticals, which is I like it so long. What Buddy says is, and it's true, you would double the wind speed, you multiply the speed of the propeller by 8. Okay, so you get a lot of RPM. But there again, RPM give you centrifugal force. So therefore, if the wind quadruples in speed, this thing is flying, if it's not strong, it's going to come apart. Well, with the Salonius, if you double the wind speed, you only multiply the speed by 1.5.
Well,
therefore,
check this out.
It turns slower in a higher speed, higher wind, but it creates 8 times more of the torque. See what I'm saying?
Check this out. Go out there and watch, Google up YouTube, exploding wind turbines, exploding windmills. Now, the windmill has a lot of power, but the engineering on it, even as high tech as you think that thing is ridiculous because they can't, like you said, they can't hold up to too much before they'll end up tearing themselves apart. That's a lot of power that you're dealing with. Now, if you understand physics and you understand how to transfer energy, you wouldn't have the actual generator head up built inside the windmill at all. What you do is use everything you know from gear ratios to hydraulics to electrical or whatever to literally transfer that wind energy, so no matter how fast that doggone thing is spinning, even if you get a hurricane force wind coming through there, it doesn't matter, because you're going to transfer that energy the way that you want it to come down that pipe. All right, and the only thing that you got to do to make sure that is a super strong is the bearing and the blade. If you got a bearing that will withstand 50,000 RPMs, and which is extreme, because if you get your deal going that fast, then it's pretty doggone windy outside. It might be dangerous. Nonetheless, you can transfer that energy from that blade through those bearings down a gear-driven shaft or whatever, as long as all the systems throughout can withstand well exceeding whatever nature will throw at you. You can get it down that shaft into a transmission that will automatically reduce or speed up as necessary according to the input power on the other side. So you can actually protect that generator head just by keeping it on the ground and using physics to speed it up and slow it down as necessary.
50,000 RPMs. Have a bearing that can withstand that, that's not a big deal. Because think about your alternator on your car. I mean, from the power source pulley to the pulley on the alternator is a 4 or 5 to 1 ratio.
Yep.
You're running your automobile at 4,000 RPM, then your alternator is turning at 16,000 RPMs. Or maybe even 20. So, I mean, that's just a normal everyday car out there, and they run for hours. I mean, nonstop down the interstate when you're on a trip, and they run for days and days and days sometimes. I mean, you know, how often do you change an alternator because the bearing went out, not because it burned out? Yeah, very seldom. I mean, I've had alternators last 8, 10, 12 years. So, and they're not high-tech batteries. I mean, not bearings. So think about that. I mean, you know, it might be a little more expensive to get one to go 50,000 RPM, but why would you want anything to turn that fast?
Well, here's an idea for you.
Okay.
If you've got the wind turbine and it's hooked up to a basically a pneumatic style air pump, and this air pump is capable of exceeding, you know, or at least matching 50,000 RPMs, and it's self-oiled, self-lubricated, and all that kind of stuff, you could send that energy from the wind through the propeller, down through the pneumatic pump, and down a hose all the way down to the ground and run a pneumatic engine at the bottom of it. You've seen those, how strong those doggone torque wrenches are for like taking nuts off of wheels, lug nuts.
Uh-huh.
So you can generate enough pressure using air pressure. You literally, there is a windmill out there that you can go to, like Orsland's Farm and Home, and its only purpose is to aerate your pond. It basically has an air pump on the top. It pumps air down and pumps bubbles into your pond. That's all it does.
You know, speaking of wind turbines,
yeah,
and static electricity, what about coating the inside of a piece of pipe halfway on one side with one type of plastic, halfway on the other side with another type of plastic, painting the outside of the pipe flat black, and then sticking it straight up in the air in the sunlight? It'll heat up, the air will flow naturally through the conductor pipe.
Well, see, I like the way you think, because
you have a wind turbine that produces electricity with absolutely no moving parts, nothing to wear out. No moving parts.
So,
think about that.
Using everything that's going on, including the doggone height of the wind turbine, you could actually use static charge build up to pulse a motor. And the motor doesn't have to run constantly. All it has to do is every so often when the capacitor gets charged, it discharges across and spins the propeller over briefly. So the static electricity, if you made it right where it wasn't grounded to the earth, you know, the reason why those doggone things aren't sitting there attracting lightning bolts is because it's grounded to the earth and discharging that energy into the dirt, and so you don't get shocked every time you go around it. But if you had that pole separated from the ground and a spark gap in there, you could see a constant arc going across that deal because it's picking up that static charge from the atmosphere. You see what I mean?
Yes, it is.
But since it's grounded to the earth, it's just traveling the path and it's going down into the dirt, and so you don't even know it's happening. You know, if you look on every tower out there, they got these huge guide wires. Those are grounding it to the earth, and so you don't really have to worry about if it gets struck by lightning, it ain't going to be a problem. It'll just follow the path down through the wires, and unless you're hanging on to the doggone wire when it happens, then you'll be fine.
It's not because it gets hit with lightning. It makes electricity because of the air blowing across it. It fills up static electricity so strong, the really high ones that are 300, 400, 500 feet high.
Yep.
The static electricity is so strong that it can actually jump 8 to 10 feet. And, I mean, bust your head wide open.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, on just a dry, hot day, they have 20, 30, 40,000 volts.
The atmospheric group out there with that wire up there, they understand how to make this work because they ain't got that wire grounded directly to the earth. And so it's able to bring in that energy from the atmosphere down that wire. And then from that point on the other side of the system, then they have their ground. So they're actually capturing that energy that way.
You know, that's the thing here. I live in Louisville, Texas, and the city ordinance says you cannot produce electricity by any means of wind power. Yet, they have all these metal electric poles throughout the grid system, throughout the entire city, and every one of them is grounded because they're making electricity. Think about that. They are violating their own city ordinance more than 20,000 times.
Well, the crazy thing about that whole not being able to generate power is, what's the purpose? Why, you know, on one hand, governments holler about, you know, we got to find clean, renewable alternative energy. And if you have a way to supplement your energy costs at home, not only is it going to benefit you, but it's going to benefit them as well, with the exception is maybe they don't get as many taxes.
Right.
It's crazy, man. So, you know, that's why I call it mad science, because it drives me nuts.
Hey, I just had a thought. If I could get a 25, 30 foot telephone pole to your place, two of them, how would we dig a hole and stand them up?
Well, they got these post hole diggers that you can hook to the front of a bobcat. If I can get my bobcat up and going, I could disconnect that and cut the hole myself.
But how would we stand the pole up?
You put one end of it next to the hole, and then you use a long rope, and you drag it up until it tips it up into the deal. You start it off jacking one end up until you get it into the hole, and then you use the power of the bobcat to do the other portion to drag it from the top, and it'll fall down into the hole itself. I've watched them stand them up before.
So you think we could do it, right?
Yeah, we could do it.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is right here, right now in front of my house, they are replacing about 100, 150 old telephone poles, and I'm going to see if they'll give me about 5 or 6 of them.
That'd be cool.
And I'll bring two of them down there. We'll put them about 50 feet apart or 30 or 40 feet apart, whatever, and stick them up in the air and then stretch some kind of nylon or poly something with a rope from one to the other, and then stretch copper wire down about every 12 inches.
Yeah.
What do you think?
We could also put other science projects, mount them to their wind powers and stuff like that, try out different types of turbines on the same pole.
Yes, yes. Excellent. These poles are sturdy enough if you use, medium-sized wind turbines like Muddy Bills. We could put a cross arm at the top and put two on top of each one. So you'd have four wind turbines and a whole bunch of other just static electricity wires coming down. We'd probably build something that would run your whole house, man.
See if you can get him motivated to take that doggone motor I sent up there with you on a blade.
Yeah. That's going to be hard to do. Hard to get him motivated to do anything.
Anyway, when I did try to find a good song to throw on here and take a music break.
One thing folks are riding the wave.
Yeah, I don't know if I can find that. I can try. Anyway, the whole thing that I'm trying to get across, that we got all the science necessary to give them exactly what they wanted. Looks like I did find it. You really like that song, don't you?
Yes, I do. He explains exactly what we talk about on both Mad Science and Knife of the Round Table.
Anyway.
Actually, what we're talking about.
My brain stopped working there for a second. Anyway, we got all the doggone science necessary. We got all the physics necessary. A lot of things might need to be re-engineered or rethought out how you do them. If you got windmills out there that are literally failing mechanically and exploding, there's ways that you can take that energy off of that blade without having the generator head on the very tip top of it. You can transfer that energy, and that's all we've been talking about this whole doggone time is transfer of energy.
Exactly.
That's the copper wire in your motors and stuff ain't nothing more than railroad tracks. And we figured out how to take huge masses of steel and products and move them from point A to point B on those railroad tracks using physics, so why couldn't we figure out ways to do it even better for less? If you understand what I'm saying. Some of these deals got big old diesel engines in them, and they're electric motors that once they get up to running, it's the electric motor that turns the doggone train.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They are electric trains. It's just they carry their own generators and diesel motors.
Yeah. And so what if we can generate the power to reduce the amount of fuel necessary to run that doggone train?
Okay, here, I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was talking about the efficiency of the train, that is another part of the efficiency. Each and every wheel on the locomotive itself has not only has its own motor, but the wheel is hooked directly to the shaft of the motor, so there's no transmission. There's no, that universal gear. Anyway, there's no gearing. There's no transmission. I mean, the wheel is fastened directly to the motor. So there's no energy loss there.
I can't remember where it's at. I think it might be over in Japan, but they got a monorail system set up over there, ain't it?
Yeah. Over 600 miles an hour.
Yeah. That thing's pretty doggone impressive, if you ask me.
I mean, they had one, they called it the Bullet. Another one was called the Silver Streak. They got a different name for each one of them. But I remember back when I was in high school, they got one up to like 200, 250 miles an hour. But now they're running it over 600 miles an hour.
Well, where they're...
They're electric. They're not diesel or gasoline or anything.
Where there is a will, there is definitely, without a doubt, a way. And that's what we talk about here on Mad Science. So we're going to take a music break, and I'm playing your song here, Raymond.
Yeah.
All right. So everybody stay tuned. We'll be back. Short coffee break, that kind of jazz. Peace and love.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here.
What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Children to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom on the mountain and the valley folk below. On the mountain was a treasure buried deep beneath a stone, and the valley people swore they'd have it for their very own. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Do it in the name of heaven. Justify it in the end. Was the enemy trumpet going? Come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. Once a soldier rides away. Of the valley sent a message up the hill asking for the buried treasure, tons of gold for which they'd kill. Came an answer from the kingdom, with our brothers we will share all the secrets of our mountains, all the riches buried there. Sword, and they killed the mountain people, so they won their just reward. Now they stood beside the treasure on the mountain, dark and red. Turned the stone and the secret. Peace on earth was all it said. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Justified in the end. Well, the enemy trumpet's blowing. Come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. Once a soldier rides away. Go ahead and hate your neighbor. Go ahead and cheat a friend. Justified in the end. While the enemy trumpet's blowing, come the judgment day on the bloody morning after. One tin soldier rides away.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning.
What did I just say?
A bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning.
Point. trouble, came a voice from the sky on a magical night. And in the colors of a thousand sunsets, they traveled to the world on a silvery light. The people of the earth stood waiting, watching as the ships came one by one. Setting fire to the sky as they landed, carrying to the world children of the sun. Children of the sun. All at once came a sound from inside. Thick beam of light hit the ground. Journey of a thousand lives.
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, could you describe the ruckus, sir? That's right, you're listening to Mad Science Live. forgot to mention, Stephen Gibbons posted a link inside the chat room over there at superchat.html, and it basically... says, when is an internal combustion engine not an internal combustion engine? When it is being transformed into a modular reforming reactor that could make hydrogen available to power fuel cells wherever there is natural gas supply available. I hadn't had a whole lot of time to read up on this article, and so I can't really speak out a whole bunch about it, but jump over there and check it out. It sounds like some interesting technology that some people are working on. I think it's a university there. But nonetheless, another bit of mad science going on there. Either way, the link's in the chat room. Probably scroll back up in the chat room past some of the previous comments. And so these folks are basically turning what a four-stroke engine... to produce hydrogen and methane, that kind of stuff, without no kind of ignition is what I think I've understood from it. But it's what I was talking about, essentially, with the internal combustion engine using everything from physics to, from pressure to heat, being able to combust a material such as water, It's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's not science fiction. It's science fact. You get anything hot enough under the right pressure, and it'll burn. So, essentially that's it. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. There's all kinds of different ways to move things using physics, and so with that said. I also just added a few more projects on my list to use an air pressure and stuff to make magnets go up a long pipe and then dropping them back down another long pipe with a bunch of coils on there to see what kind of energy could be produced that way. It's all kinds of different things that you can do with physics. Physics can be fun if you're an inventor. What do you think, Raymond?
Yeah, it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you make all kinds of nifty gizmo. That's why I like the doggone game Mousetrap, because it's fun to watch. You set the thing up and click one thing, and next thing you know, everything starts tipping and rolling and spinning and all that kind of stuff. So there ain't no reason why, like what I was mentioning to you while we were offline, that you couldn't use the falling power of that magnet not only to create electricity, but you could also use it to turn, like, the little impellers as it goes by. You see what I mean? When it's falling down using gravity. So, just taking learning a little bit of physics and using all the things that we know, from gravity to air pressure to hydraulics, positive displacements as opposed to just an impeller type pump.
Right.
One of the things that makes hydraulics work is a positive displacement pump. That's how you put pressure through one way, and there's no way for that pressure to go back the other way. And you keep adding pressure to it, and that causes that piston, that energy is trying to transfer. It can't go nowhere, but it's going to follow the path of least resistance. And the least resistance is going to be that big old 30-ton truck up on the top of that jack. And that sounds crazy, don't it? That's the path of least resistance. Well, the sidewalls of that doggone jack can hold that much weight, and the only part that where that energy can escape is by forcing that water or liquid up, the hydraulic fluid up, and pushing that piston out. The piston's going out because it's the least resistance, even though it's got that truck on top of it.
You know, the only actual difference between hydraulics and pneumatics, as far as figuring and physics and so forth goes, is the air can be compressed and liquids cannot. But once you get the air pressure up, it acts just like hydraulics.
I found what looks like a old football pump, right? Uh-huh. At a thrift store. And it's got a little check valve inside there, and I actually had to turn the valve around backwards so that I could get this thing to function. But I'm going to turn it into either a steam engine or a combination steam or air engine just by modifying a little bit. But, doggone it, there's a couple little tricks that I got to be able to overcome in order to get it to shut pressure off one way and stuff like that. It's just a matter of figuring it out mechanically to get it to happen. But it's taking something that's already existed and modifying something that's already made to turn it into essentially an engine.
Right.
And I was going somewhere with that, but my brain just went sidetracked because I got like 10 million things that I'm thinking about of all these different ideas and projects. But you said something that triggered that. Oh, it's the air pressure.
Right.
When I put air pressure into the bottom, the air pressure, because it's a sealed container, was going to take the path of least resistance. Now, some air can escape around the plunger and make it out the top of the deal, but nonetheless, that air pressure still has enough power to force that rod out the other end. And since
right.
there's a spring at the other end, when it gets to a certain point, it can't do it anymore, and then the back pressure is released by opening a valve.
Release valve, yeah.
Yeah. So, look, it's using physics and mechanics and basic science to get work done in a more efficient manner. It's as simple as that. And there ain't no reason why we couldn't begin to engineer society in the same fashion, using everything that nature's already provided. You know, feel like I'm beating a dead horse, Raymond.
Yeah, we do have a tendency to repeat ourselves quite a bit. But maybe somebody's out there listening for the first time, you know?
Yep, and that's my hopes, that they'll realize that there's more potential out there. You can repurpose an old washing machine into a generator.
Right.
You know, you can take other things out there, using the knowledge that we've given everybody, ways to move energy, store energy, use that energy to get work done. And in the process of it, I don't know why I got to keep on repeating it, but you're not defying any known laws of physics. So all the knuckleheads out there that like to troll people and give people a rash all the time, man, you should pay attention. You might learn something.
Right.
You know, these projects that I've done, there's always somebody that comes along the line and always tries to overthink what I'm trying to show them.
Right.
And if you overthink something, then you basically might as well just give it up. you know, I think it was Henry Ford that said, if you think you can, you can't, you're, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Either way.
Either way, you're right.
Yeah. So, if you think you can't, you're not going to do it, so you can't. Period. You're not going to try. And so, if you take all these ideas that we've been putting out on the table, you throw one of them down on the table, is it going to run your house? Probably not. But if you take these things in conjunction with other things, Lorraine was able to lift a lot of weight on the other side just by pushing his finger on the two-stage oscillator and using leverage and physics to get work done.
And I was using my thumbs.
Yeah. So.
And I was pushing with my thumbs 2 inches. And each time I pushed, I picked up 180 pounds. And I would push on a sharp 90-degree corner on a piece of 3/8-inch flat bar steel. Now, you take 180 pounds, put your finger in there, your thumb, and you take 180 pounds and lay it gently on your thumb, you're going to knock a hole in your thumb and draw blood.
Yep.
But yet, I was pushing this thing and not even getting hurt, no pain whatsoever. So I was pushing very, very little energy, but yet I was lifting 180 pounds. Twice. 43 would twice would be 86 times a minute.
So, using things that we know from gear ratios and stuff like that, you could literally make a high RPM deal just on the slow amount of downforce that thing has, could actually turn a generator really fast.
Now, torque is nothing more than speed slowed down.
They used to
transfer to low speed or high speed.
Yeah, they used to have these nifty little toys that you run them across the ground. They had a big wheel in the center of it. You run it across the ground, and the gears would get that thing to spinning real fast. And when you let go of it, it would release that energy and fly across the floor.
Hey, what about your old push type reel mowers? They didn't have a motor on them.
Yep.
They were off the wheels, and it'd be gear ratio. I mean, the blades actually made like 15 revolutions for every time the wheels made one.
Yep. And there's all kinds of toys out there. You remember, I used to have these little toy. They were like made to be look like laser guns or something like that. Had a little grinder wheel inside there. And when you pull the gear, it'd get that little grinder wheel spinning up really fast, which would go across another little piece of metal and shoot sparks out of it. It was neat. But sometimes the best ideas, you look back in time and you look at some of the toys that they were using back in the day and some of the gizmos that they had, sometimes the best ideas, the best ways to move forward is to look back and see what they were doing back then.
Uh-huh.
You know, I keep talking about the Mercury Arc Rectifier because that thing's an impressive piece of machinery, impressive piece of technology. If they only knew back then what they had access to, we would be using it today. Because they were able to energize what started off being liquid mercury. Basically melt it, vaporize it, and electrify it, and turn it into the fourth state of matter being plasma, and basically built a one-way track for that energy to go and rectified DC current on the other side of that doggone glass tube, man. That was pretty cool. They generated heat, light, and DC current out the other side of it. So, that particular technology is what my plasma reactor is based on. Not that hoodoo voodoo version that you hear the criminals like Keshi out there blabbering on about. You gotta love your reactor. If you're a jerk, you don't get no free electricity. And when you talk about taking and corroding my wires, making all the wires in my house turn black by nano coating them, I'm getting a little bit concerned, man. Turn your house into a superconductor, or even worse, a fire hazard.
You know, thing is, there's no such thing as free energy, right? Now, you're going to walk across the floor from the living room to the kitchen and get yourself a cup of coffee. But you put down a wool carpet and put on some nylon socks. You better be careful how you pick up that pot of coffee.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you don't walk didn't get you coffee anyway, right? Yeah. So the energy that you produce is free.
That's right. And
I had to put down wool carpet and put on some nylon socks, that's all.
We're surrounded in a sea of free energy.
Yes, we are. Floating in it. We swim in it every day, every second of every day. Every millisecond. It's all around us.
You know, nature has the potential to literally build up 300-mile-an-hour winds in the form of a tornado or a hurricane or, you know, whatever. And that destructive force will literally rip a house to shreds. If you yourself decided you wanted to tear down a house, you got your work cut out for you, unless you own a bulldozer and you can try to equalize the force. But nonetheless, that's a lot of work tearing down a house, cleaning up the mess and all that kind of stuff. But
I've seen two-story houses literally explode and blow themselves 200-300 feet in the air in 2 seconds.
Yeah, you've seen trucks being picked up off the ground like little styrofoam toys and chucked multiple yards across to, you know. And so nature's got power, man. If you could ever tap into the power of a tornado, you could power this planet, man. It's as simple as that.
Sure.
But if you learn of what is actually occurring that actually causes that tornado, you know, the hot air and the cold air causing an interaction between each other, I don't know why anybody hasn't really got down to serious brass tacks, so to speak, whenever it talks about physics as far as cold falls and heat rises. So if you have a chamber and you can keep hot air coming in on one side, cold air coming in for the other side, and put some, you know, sawdust inside there, you're going to get a rotation. All right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts. If you take hot water and mix it with cold water, you're going to get a rotation. Those two are going to interact trying to get to their respective place. Cold at the lowest spot and heat at the highest spot. And so, using that kind of mentality, you can literally produce a tornado in a jar. You know, some people put like a little ball bearing or a marble inside of a jar and mix some dish soap and some water, and they shake it up and get that thing, that ball bearing, to spinning inside there, which creates a vortex in the water, and essentially, well, you got a tornado going on. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I tell you what, like you're talking about the ball bearing and using a magnet twirl thing at the bottom to get the ball bearing to go around in a circle, causing that vortex. You take a glass or a piece of pipe, for example, 4 inches in diameter, and you get that water, say, like a half inch from the top, you can get that water to raise up the sides until it spills over the sides. So you're actually, you're not pumping the water up, you're just spinning around, around, around. Centrifugal force will force it up the sides of the pipe and over the top.
Yep.
So that is a source of energy. It's a source of energy. You're actually lifting water.
Oh, yeah. Water is a really powerful and destructive force. So if you can get water spinning in a bucket, like you said, you get that to slop over the side. You could literally use that the centrifugal force of that water spinning around to push itself up a doggone tube, man.
Yes, you could.
Stephen Gibbons posted, he said, I posted that link above Stack Effect, how many people have used chimneys today. They create a constant updraft. How about putting a wind turbine or two in there? See, there's another point of brilliance. Put one of those turbines like you got up on your attic up on top of that chimney. The heat's going out anyway, and so that updraft will literally push that turbine around. Use that effect to turn a small chain or whatever away from the stack so that you don't heat your magnets up, and basically build you a little generator, generate some power off the updraft of the doggone chimney, for Pete's sake. So he's got a Wikipedia link there. It says stack effect is the movement of air into out of buildings, chimneys, flue gas stacks, or other containers resulting from air buoyancy. Buoyancy occurs due to the difference indoor to outdoor air density resulting from the temperature and moisture differences. The result is either a positive or negative buoyancy force. the greater the thermal difference and the height of the structure, the greater the buoyancy force and thus the stack effect. The stack effect is also referred to as the chimney effect, and it helps the helps drive natural ventilation, infiltration, and fires, Capron disaster, and King's crossfires. There's a link, I guess, to attach that. Anyway, essentially what he's saying is when that heat rises is that it's actually causing a draft from the temperature difference. Pretty much what we just talked about, right, Raymond?
Exactly what we're talking about.
So, imagine this, and I've actually got this into play. I got a heat box sitting outside, and when the sun is beating down on that heat box, everybody knows inside your car will get up to a couple hundred degrees, and so there's a temperature difference between that, and that hose goes all the way over up underneath that one gizmo I got that has a turbine on the top. So even when the wind ain't blowing, if it's hot inside that box, that heat will draft upwards and go through that turbine and spin it.
I just had an idea. What if you took a radiator, put it on the sunny side of your house, painted it black, put insulation behind it, and glass in front of it to keep the wind off of it, and we're talking about in the wintertime now, okay? Now, where the water comes out of the top of that radiator, when it gets hot, it'll rise. You can go through the wall of the house into another radiator with a fan on it. So now you're blowing that hot water, you're blowing the heat off of it, so it's cool, and it comes down. But as the water turns, you've got a really small hydraulic turbine inside the pipe. So now you're making electricity and heating your house at the same time.
Yeah.
Think about that a minute.
See, there's so many different ways that we could do that. You know, the sun's only shining on one side of your house at a time, depending on what time of day it is. It's shining on the roof or shining on one side of the house. And so if you got a system on every side of your house, one side's cool, the other side's being heated, and so that heat differential, you don't even have to have an electric water pump to move that water from point A to point B.
Now, we could add one more step, and that's when you're blowing the fan on the radiator inside, you're blowing it on Peltier devices.
See, there's also...
You're making electricity by the movement of the water, electricity from the heat of the water, and you're heating your house all at the same time with the same apparatus.
There's also another deal that could be thrown up in there, is that the technology available, you can go right on eBay and you can buy these water cooler radiators for your computers. And they're just little small things. They actually come with a fan and they're fairly reasonable in price. But you could get a couple of those right there and build a little mini-scale version to test out what we're talking about basically moving water from one radiator to the next without even having to have a water pump, because one side is hot and the other side's cold, and in the middle of them, you have Peltier elements sandwiched in the middle of them that you could actually use to charge batteries. Put one side out in the sun, the other side in the shade, and there you go, man. You got a temperature difference. That water is getting hot on that side, so it's mixing with the cool water, which is causing the circulation to go back to the other side. Because
right.
The heat's got to transfer. The energy has got to go somewhere. It's going to take the path of least resistance every single time when nature balances itself back out.
Yep.
Hi, Thomas. You're live on air. How you doing?
You guys are still going on the radio?
Yeah.
And you didn't make a separate room on Skype for that?
Oh.
Usually you guys use a totally separate room every single time. It's just the main mad scientist room in here.
Oh, that's because Raymond called the entire mad science room.
So don't
blame me for it.
You could have not answered.
That's rude. I wouldn't like hang up on Raymond. Besides that, I was going to see who...
You'll hang up. You just call from another room and when he goes, oh, somebody's trying to call me from over here, and answers that, it'll hang up on the mad science room.
Yeah, we've been down that road before. I got a podcast to prove that, where every time I'm trying to talk to somebody, somebody else is calling in. Instead of everybody jumping in the same room, they're all trying to call in at the same time. And so I'm like, hang up and call this guy, and then call that guy, and then call me back. And we got probably about 5 minutes of a show of hearing doom, 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 doom as the Skype is calling in and hanging up and all that.
If I recall, I was involved in that, and it was because Skype didn't want to actually call people properly. It would make like two rooms when you call somebody.
Well, nonetheless, it was aggravating.
Yeah, it was like a mirror room or something.
All right, so anyway, what we've been talking about today is essentially taking energy and moving it from point A to point B. Using the laws of physics to our advantage, we can literally, if we understand what the law of physics says, we understand what that thing is capable of doing. So if we don't want a certain one to happen, we don't invoke that certain one. But if we, like, you know, the example, we talked about Raymond's two-stage oscillator. You know, he used leverage and gear ratios in order to be able to use a small amount of force to raise a lot of weight on the other end. And people will argue till they're blue in the face that, oh, well, you know, it took too much energy for you to do that, but yet Raymond's sitting over there pushing his thumbs on this deal and raising over 100 pounds of weight off the floor, and he's doing this for a long period of time while drinking his coffee and smoking a cigarette and not getting tired. Maybe it took a lot to get it started, but once he got it started, that was the key. So if it takes a lot to get started, so you use hydraulic pressure to get the initialization going. Once it's up in the air, the hydraulic pressure stops, and then now it's just the thumbs again. Now you didn't spend whatever energy it took to do that. And in reality, we also talked about taking a set of dominoes and modifying those dominoes, put magnets in them, and have the dominoes on hinges to where all you got to do is tip the first domino, and all the rest of dominoes will fall because of the mass falling over, hitting the next domino in line. Well, when it gets down to the other end, the final domino, by that time, picked up enough charge inside of a capacitor, a supercapacitor, that snaps and hits a relay that basically pushes all the dominoes, stands them right back up again, using magnetic force on the other side to attract them back.
With a solenoid, we discussed that too.
Yeah, with a solenoid.
Well, so solenoid is an electromagnet,
right?
But somebody will come along and they'll say, "Well, you can't do that because it takes this much and that, and blah blah, whatever." You know,
according to Henry Ford, that explained that he can't do that. Okay, he can't, but we can, because we know we can.
Yeah.
He thinks he cannot, then he's not going to try. So he cannot do it.
He said, if you think you can't, or you think you can, you're right.
Right. Either way, you're right.
Let's say, aren't those people that constantly say, you can't do this, you can't do that, without even really trying, related to the whataboutists?
Yeah. And they are also they're also the ones that shout the loudest about having to pay an electric bill and stuff.
Right.
You know? Oh, the government. Nah, government this, the government that. Well, okay, if you don't like the way the government's doing, try it yourself and do it better. It's that simple. Man, it just blows my mind. We're sitting here right now talking on a computer system that is connected to a massive network of just knowledge after knowledge after knowledge. And if you can sort through all the garbage and the smut out there on the internet, you could educate yourself beyond your wildest imagination. And if you need to know something about physics, there's a website out there that I posted a link to. It's basically a YouTube video, Physics Videos by Eugene. And he shows you with visualization, mechanically, how things are working. And so you can sit around and watch these videos and learn a few things. And then you take something away from that knowledge, such as how an inductor functions. Well, somebody paid attention because those magnetic ballasts are inductors, that they realize that if you The inductors try to resist the change of current flow. They don't like any change. They once it gets going, they said that if it was connected to itself and it had a flow going, that it would resist any change to that flow, and it would continue to allow the electron flow forever until the resistance finally wore it down. And if you had a superconductor on there, it would never stop. But nonetheless, they figured out that you got to be able to control that power when that inductor decides to change and release its energy. It has high voltage spikes. Well, they use that piece of the laws of physics in order to make a magnetic ballast. Instead of having to have a primary and a secondary, you can do it all off the primary. You can induce a current into it, release that current. When that current's released and nature slaps it back down, it has such a voltage spike that it's able to light your fluorescent light bulbs. That's physics. Physics of water, physics of electricity, physics of free power, physics of any kind of mechanical energy. It's all out there, folks. That's why, I believe it so much that I literally wrote a letter to the President of these United States. There's a link on the site somewhere to show you my letter to the President. And you could actually read it, and I'm basically telling him what I'm telling you right now. If I didn't believe it, I wouldn't make a fool out of myself and try to contact the man at the top of the American power structure or whatever. And so, I honestly believe you could bring the right team together. We could literally re-engineer a few things and make things work better and actually be able to have the clean, alternative, renewable energy sources that the world keeps asking for. Don't sit out there and boo-hoo about climate change or climate disruptions or the earth being destroyed by this and that if you're not willing to step inside the ring and help out the situation. We've been hearing about all these different things and these needs forever and a day. When the people finally step forward, like Thomas and Raymond and myself, and we're sitting here pointing out, look, this is available, that's available, you can repurpose that and do this with that, and if you take this chemical and mix it with this chemical, you get this reaction. And so we're just a couple of few of the probably billions of people out there with ideas such as what we got who look at things in a different fashion than the book actually says. And sometimes we refer to the book so that we can get the terminology right. But nonetheless, if you just focus in on one specific anomaly with anything that's happening, any physical motion or power, then I can't run my house with that. Well, of course you can't, knucklehead. But if you take that windmill and you put this generator on there that will send electricity every time the wind blows down to a rectifier that will charge your battery banks that you can in turn run your house on. Is it? am I crazy or is this world nuts? It's mad science, man. What do you guys say?
I think you're right. In fact, no, I don't think you're right. I know you're right.
Well, if I get an answer from the President, it'll be a miracle of epic proportions. But if I get any actions after I get an answer from the President, it'll be a miracle of epic, epic, epic proportions.
Yep.
And if we get the world motivated towards giving them what they've been asking for all along, they can stand back and let us do all the work. Just put us in the right situation where we got access to the tools and technologies necessary to put together the puzzle pieces like we've been talking, and we'll get it resolved. It's as simple as that.
I think you've already been given that opportunity. You just need to be willing to make the journey from where you live to where Raymond's at.
Well, I guess maybe you have to go to Texas. Ain't there a song about that?
Get us all together with all the tools in one place and just hunker down until we get her done.
All my exes live in Texas.
But we won't tell them you're there. That way they don't come to try to hunt you down.
Oh, that's why he resides in Tennessee. I love that song.
We'll get you a ball cap and a pair of aviator sunglasses so they won't know who you are.
Cool. I got some of those glasses with the mustache on them, but ironically enough, I look the same without them, so...
No, man, you just have to get a pair of aviators and a ball cap and keep your mouth shut, and anytime anybody goes, hey, who's your friend? Oh, that's Silent Bob.
Yeah.
You just don't say anything.
That's a good plan. Stephen Gibbons in the chat room says, I was thinking about cavitation heating. I think they are missing a trick with the indents on the drum. How about fitting small magnets in there and making their outer drum copper and a further outer drum to hold yet more water that would be heated using induction from the spinning magnet? See, that's another point of brilliance. You know, there's a destructive force out there called a water hammer. And if you ain't careful when you're running steam, this water hammer will literally bust your pipes. That's a lot of power. The water's pretty destructive. But the cavitation that he's talking about, just merely by spinning water, you can heat the water up. They figured out a way to not only use cavitation, but to use the water hammer effect as well in order to produce a lot of power. And also, what he's talking about as far as the induction of the spinning magnets across copper, there's a method by which when you spin magnets across copper, it creates currents inside that copper, eddy currents that then in turn causes the copper to get hot, which heats the water. So what Stephen just explained was adding all these anomalies in together and making that thing yet even better. And there's so many different possibilities with this, that using everything from compressed air to generate yet more heat and more power, it's unlimited what you could do with the proper engineering. If you understand the basics of physics and the basics of science and electricity and water, I'm blown away that here in the year 2017 we have to have a show called The Mad Science to explain to everybody about physics. I mean, it's almost as if somebody in school didn't want you to know certain things, or basically put a limitation on your thought process so that you didn't think outside the box to realize, hey, I can take this and put it with that and get this done without having to pay for that.
Yeah, you know, just said something a minute ago about Stephen Gibbons saying spinning water will generate its own heat.
Yeah.
I put about, in the wintertime, the water coming out of my faucet was 42, 43 degrees. I measured it out, weighed it out, got 1 pound so I could know how many BTUs I was doing. I took 1 pound of water, put it in my blender, and put it on puree. In 20 minutes, it raises up to 92, 93 degrees. That's 50 degrees in 20 minutes. That's 50 BTUs of heat. Just spinning the water, no other heat involved. The friction of the water on itself.
Well, there's an old trick that the farmers have been using for years to keep their cattle ponds from freezing over in the winter. Now, put these big old blades out there, and as the wind is blowing through these blades and turning these blades around, it stirs up the water and keeps the water constantly moving so it doesn't have a chance to freeze.
Exactly. And because of the water moving and rubbing against itself, the friction of the water builds its own heat.
Yep. And so with that said, imagine those things aren't spinning like super fast, they're just spinning around. Imagine taking and spinning that water at 50,000 RPMs, you'll boil the fish out of the pond before it's all said and done, because that heat will keep rising. No matter how cold it is.
If it's trout in that water and it gets super cold, you are talking about actually boiling them out, because after they get over a certain temperature, they can't spawn anymore.
Yep.
And they'll just basically grow old and die with no young.
Yep, there you go.
I have a fishless pond.
Yeah, and fishless ponds are usually overtaken by snapping turtles and frogs and skeeters.
Skeeters.
Yeah. Frogs don't mind ponds with all that doggone green muck on them. They like it.
I don't mind frogs either. I love them. They taste great.
And little did I know what turned out to be a hassle for somebody who owns a pond that lost all their fish and the water turns green. What's that stuff called, the green stuff on the that floats on the little pellets?
Algae?
No, it's something else. Doggone it. I did a bit. I did No, doggone it. They call it something else. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, not only can you take that stuff and you can make fuel out of it, you can make fertilizer out of it, because what it does is it sucks up all the nutrients out of the water and it grows like wildfire. It's like little floating green things. I can't remember the name of it, doggone it. But
sounds exactly like algae to me.
Well, it's not algae. It's not moss. It's duckweed.
Alright.
Yeah, it's called duckweed.
Duckweed is a plant, algae is a plant, and both of them contain vegetable
oil. Well, when duckweed takes over your pond, it sucks all the nutrients out of the pond and basically turns your pond into just a dead zone with the exception of frogs and turtles and skeeters. But, nonetheless, if you had fish in there, fish eat the duckweed. Ducks eat duckweed. And people can eat duckweed only after they cook it. And there's a lot of... You don't want to eat duckweed raw because it'll cause you excruciating pain and probably worse. But he said, are fishless ponds not called swimming pools? Yeah. But if you got duckweed in it, you wouldn't want to swim in it because it'd like be stuck in your hair. And I don't know. Maybe you would like to swim in it. Who knows? But nonetheless, you can take that duckweed, you can make, you can put it in a dehydrator, you can make fish food out of it, you can make fertilizer out of it, you can make fuel out of it, you can take the duckweed and feed your fish and heat your barn and fertilize your garden, because it's packed full of nutrients, because it sucked all the nutrients out of the water.
You can make methane gas out of it.
Yeah. Make all kinds of stuff, man. See, so even when nature throws something out there, when you're not using it, nature throws something out there and it gets out of control, there's still a use for it. It's crazy. And hedge apples. I did a video called Redneck Battery. You wouldn't believe how many people give me a rash about that one, tell me how stupid I was, thumbing my video down, that kind of jazz. But a hedge apple has citric acid in it. And so if you take copper and you take zinc and you put that down inside there and you put a voltmeter on there, you actually get a voltage off of it. You just turned it into a chemical battery. Plus, this stuff is so doggone sticky, you could probably make glue out of it, you know? And, you know, the seeds in there, animals don't eat the hedge apple per se. They want the seeds in there because the seeds have benefits for the animals. There's... Even in something that you would think would be normally no purpose whatsoever, like what in the tarnation are hedge apples good for, other than using them for redneck cannonballs or you know, whatever, that they're normally worthless. But they're packed full of seeds, and so if you want to take those seeds, you can plant a hedgerow. And in that hedgerow, you can feed off of that firewood, because in that hedge, which they call Missouri orange, is really fancy looking wood that you can make pocket knife handles that'll last forever. You can make really strong boards out of, and canes or whatever. But when you burn that, since it has oil in it, the bugs aren't going to eat the hedge tree because of the oil in there. Eventually they will rot away, but for the most part, they'll last for generations.
You know, the hedge apple tree, like you're talking about, that is the second most densest wood in the North American continent.
Yeah, try to break a hedge stick, a half inch or even an inch of hedge stick, try to break one. Man, yeah. They're strong.
It takes forever for that stuff to rot because the wood is so tough, so hard, that bacteria doesn't even want to eat it.
And when you burn it for firewood, it puts off a lot of heat because it has oil in there. And even in the waste of the burn, you get the creosote burned up through the deal. If you save that creosote, you got another fuel source. And the ashes off of it, you can throw on your garden. You can make lye soap and all kinds of stuff with it. So, nature knows what to do, man. You pay attention to nature, you fixing to learn something. You see what I mean?
Yep.
We got it all, folks. All we need is for people to come to the table, start making stuff, tell your friends about it, have them make stuff, build networks in your community. If the government ain't getting the job done, then the people need, it's usually the government calls the people up when they want to build a building, right? Am I wrong?
Oh.
Yeah. They say, hey, people, we need you to build this building so we can have Congress. And so the people gather and they earn a little money and they build the building and it got done. The people did it. When a company wants to get something done, who do they call? They call the people. Hey, people, come on over here. I'll pay you some money. Build this for me. Make this for me. Deliver that. Right? Well, people got it done. And so, with that said, if the people want something done, Grandpa used to say, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself. Because if you wait around for somebody else to get it done, it ain't happening. So, we're working on our projects between us at the best pace that we can do with what we got to work with. But imagine if we could get the whole society, whole communities to come together and bring their tools and, start knocking these projects off one at a time. This engine that I'm talking about running on water, not only would it be able to have the capability of give you the power source that you want for electricity, but it also have distillation properties where you could clean the dirty water and make it good again so somebody could drink. So build a generator that will give them electricity, it will give them heat, give them fresh water, you send it over to them, and there you go, man. You just helped out a whole village. The whole village has got light. Nobody's stubbing their toe at night because they got light to see. And it can stay warm and they can have some fresh water to drink. And this isn't some sort of fantasy that I'm talking about. This is using the basic science, basic laws of physics, everything that you've heard about in electricity and water and steam generation. All these things coming together, combined into the perfect machine. It's not the hoodoo, voodoo version of plasma where you gotta love your reactor, otherwise if you're a jerk, you don't get no free electricity. It's real science. Light is heat, heat is light, vice versa. And energy can be transferred, and it can be changed. If you look at my latest video that I posted the link over there in the chat room called Bic Lighter Flashlight, I'm telling you, whenever I lit that Bic lighter and that's next to that solar panel and that LED got bright, I was a happy camper. Then I turned around and I took it to see how far I could go from there. I didn't stop at just lighting it with the Bic lighter. I used the remote control for my old DirecTV satellite and I was able to light it up using infrared. Then I took it even a step farther and I took a little 3-volt UV flashlight, little LED flashlight, put it in front of there, and doggone was able to transfer the energy from that flashlight through that solar panel and light that doggone bulb up once again. So I know that particular LED in there is set up for around about 3 volts, and so I transferred 3 volts from the flashlight through the solar panel into that and was able to light it up. So, I didn't lose nothing in the process. With exception of whatever light escaped the solar panel and went off dispersed out there, but nonetheless, still got the job done. So smart engineering, using the laws of physics already, and basic science, you tell me we can't resolve the issues of the world? You call me a climate denier all you want, I'm calling you a common sense denier.
I like that one.
Ain't no common sense in the world, man. Well, people come out there and tell you why something won't work before they ever even try it. They just took the word of the school book. man steps outside the box and says, well, wait a second, that works on several different light spectrums, and lights up his big lighter and the light comes on. Not only can he light his smoke at the same time, but he can heat the room and get some electricity at the same time. That's the way I think. You see what I mean?
Yep.
I can light my smoke right next to that solar panel. I'm getting heat on my face. If I get too close, I'll burn my mustache off. And I'm transferring the energy over, and I'm lighting up a doggone light bulb. Now, who's stupid? The one calling me a climate denier, or me calling them a common sense denier? Dun, 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 dun. Oh, mad science is fun.
It is. Really is.
Well, anyway, guys, we're getting down to the wire, man. It's like, I hate this part of the day because there's so much to say, so much to do. But, you know, once I'm off air and I get to working on my projects, that little gizmo that I told you that my friend came over and was knocking it. Oh, that ain't free energy. That's not over unity. That's not this and not that. And he just totally missed the entire point, which is the point of this entire show.
Trying to find over unity.
Yeah.
We're trying to find better ways to use the energy we have that's already free. It's there. We just need to find better ways to use it.
Bingo. See that? Brilliant. That's the point. If we can find better ways to use it, if I tell you you can go from here to California on a gallon of gas, then I'm telling you the truth. Because used properly, you could go from here to California on a gallon of gas. It's not that the fact that you're, you got, it's how you're using that gas.
You know, think about this a minute. I hope this is not foul language, but there's a little bug that they call a tumble turd. They go around picking up cow poop and horse poop, and they actually eat the stuff, but they'll get it in the form of a ball, and they'll push it over it, and they'll dig a hole and put it in the ground.
Sounds like a dung beetle to me.
Dung beetle, that's it. Yeah, yeah, dung beetle. But here's the thing. The horse and the cow, they eat the grass. They get energy from it. They poop it out. The dung beetle eats a little bit of it, lays its eggs in another ball of it, and buries it in the ground so it becomes fertilizer and grows more grass.
Yeah.
Now, is that free energy?
That's what I think. See, nature's got it all figured out. So if
Wait a minute. I mean, think about it. The horse eats the grass, turns it into food for the dung beetle. The dung beetle eats all he can, but then he buries the rest of it for fertilizer to grow more grass for the horses and the cattle.
Well, see, that's why I say nature's a good teacher, man.
Yes.
Pay attention to what's going on in nature, and pay attention to your physics and your science and mechanics, and I'll tell you what, if you can't resolve it after that, come over here, we'll help you. That's how it works. That's how it works here on the Mad Science Show. So, you know, there's a microphone here waiting for you. There's brilliant minds like Stephen Gibbons out there in the chat room, and you know, Jermaine jumps in here every now and then, and people from all over the world and all this kind of stuff, and we got Thomas on here, and if you tap into that bit of knowledge and got a question, and we can help you out with it. If we don't know, we can jump on this vast web and find you an answer and send you a link and all that kind of stuff. That's how we're going to get it done.
I'd like to see more young people like Jermaine joining in with us. Yep. I really will.
Well,
so there's some young kids out there, 15, 16, 17 years old, they're super, super smart. And I bet you anything, we can get a few of them interested in this program, and they get their friends interested, we can come up with a lot of new ideas, because some of these kids are real good thinkers. You know?
Well, I'd like to see a youth version of Mad Science and a youth version of the Knights of the Round Table. And with that said, we'd have all sides of the fence covered. We'd talk to our people our age. They'd talk to people their age. Everybody get motivated. We'd have fun doing all these physics.
Youth version of Knights of the Round Table. Would that be Mad Demo?
Huh?
You gotta look up your history on the Masons and the Knights of the Round Table, the original Knights of the Round Table.
Oh, well, I don't know what they did back then, but our version of the Knights of the Round Table is about respect, truth, and honor, and justice, and giving people a chance to make things right. And our version of mad science is sitting here, like I said, pointing out the fact we got what we need is there. And the fact that people are sitting around complaining instead of using all this information that's right there in front of you, why else would you call it anything but mad science? You know, if we're polluting our planet and our planet's dying on us, you know, eventually that food chain will fall back into our lap. You ain't got no more bees out there pollinating the plants, and you ain't got no more plants pollinating and growing or whatever. You kill off all the trees, and you basically took your oxygen source out of the way. Kill off all the plants, turn it into a dust bowl or whatever. Now, nature will bounce back, but we won't bounce back with it. It's the simple of it.
You know, you said something a while ago, kind of further around it, but if nature, like Thomas said several times, nature gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Sure.
What about when nature gives the shrimp fishermen that do shrimping in the Gulf Coast or the Gulf Sea, when nature gives them a red tide, why don't they make diesel fuel for the years that they don't have a red tide?
Well, that's...
It's red algae is a, when it blooms, covers the whole daggone Gulf Coast. And it is nothing more than 40% by weight diesel fuel.
See, and that's another thing too, before we get up out of here. Back during the BP oil spill, they tried to pretty much mask the symptoms and not cure the problem. And they put Corexit in there, which created an environmental disaster. Well, at that particular point in time, they could have called on the world to say, look, hey, we got this leak over here. Bring your, you know what a vacuum sweeper is, right?
Yeah.
You could have sucked all that fuel up into tankers and separated the water, whatever. You could have called everybody out there from all the different countries, say, look, we got this massive oil leak. We need to contain it. Bring your ships and get you some free oil. And you separate it when you get back home and basically have yourself some money or whatever.
Well, the whole thing is that oil and water will separate itself.
Yeah. That's another thing we learned from nature. Oil will float on water.
Right.
And so, you know, knowing that, then we could have, without ever putting any synthetic chemical like Corexit down in the oceans and causing a catastrophe, we could have went out there and we could have pumped that stuff to the shoreline, put it in tankers, pumped it in floating tankers, pump it into barges, and keep that contained in one general area while we're draining that mess until we was able to get down there and plug it up, and it wouldn't have been such a big mess.
Think about this a minute. Of all the helicopters in the United States, if one-tenth of them went out during that oil spill, they could have controlled where the oil went.
Yep.
Corralled it up so that the tankers could suck it up.
Well, there was capabilities of building floating walls that you could literally keep that oil contained so it couldn't go anywhere, and you could pump it out. Yeah,
exactly.
Pump it to the shore.
Yeah, seemingly those floating walls would have been made out of oil byproducts, too.
Yeah.
Daggone, man. Look, it was just simple.
Folks, it's time for you to gather up all the smart people of the world and bring them to the table. It's time to get rid of this ridiculousness and the lack of common sense. We the people have to take my grandfather's advice. If you want to get something done, you might as well get up and do it yourself. So
if you want to fight, you need to, that's for sure.
Yeah. If you want clean, renewable energy and you want us to be able to work in perfect harmony with nature, come over here. We'll help you work it out. We'll get it resolved, and the issue will no longer be on the table as far as once you resolve starvation, ain't nobody starving, right?
Right.
Once you resolve clean water issues, ain't nobody dying of thirst. Once you get a clean, renewable alternative energy, ain't no need fighting over oil anymore.
You said about clean water, that's one of the issues that ticks me off worse than anything else. I mean, everybody talks about energy crisis. There is no daggone energy crisis, but we do have a clean water crisis.
Yeah, but see, that could be resolved overnight. We've got the technology to make it happen.
And then we have the infrastructure already set in place.
Yep.
The infrastructure is already set in place. We're just not using it.
Well, we have, like I said, we got to go Mad Science Show once again, but we have every bit of technology necessary to resolve all the problems of this planet, including health and wellness and all that. It's just a matter of what we have right now is not only a failure to communicate, we have a common sense crisis of epic proportions. It has never been an energy crisis. It's always been a common sense crisis. Because even going back to the beginning of the industrial age, they had back then the technology to literally clean water. They just didn't utilize it.
Exactly.
Pay attention to guys like us.
There you go.
Hey, we're not the smartest people on the planet. Maybe not even the brightest or most popular or best looking or whatever. But I'll tell you one thing, we are. We're folks that stepped outside the box, looked at the whole situation, assessed what we had and what we didn't have, and come up with a solution, and that solution's called common sense in you.
When you say we're not the best looking people in the world, you speak for yourself, because I'm that gum handsome myself.
Man, I'm so good looking it makes me sick. Shut up, Thomas. You'd be like, it makes us sick too.
That's that I'm 42 ill, man. But I don't think it's because you're good looking. I have a feeling you might have something else to do with something else.
All right, so I got to run over just for a second just so I can say this right now. I am a chronic super genius of epic proportions, all right? And it's not easy being a good-looking super genius. It comes with a lot of responsibility. You can't just sling that stuff around because you could hurt someone. You got to use it in moderations, a little at a time. You know, you wouldn't want them to overdose on your magnificence. Hey, Raymond, that ought to sell some hip waiters.
Yeah, I'll say.
Alright, peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care, stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Same time, same bat channel. Peace.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.